Everyone loves to listen to a good book, and there are so many wonderful ones to choose, so we decided to bring you this podcast of Stories Come to Life. Each episode features a story from either classic or modern literature, especially chosen to be interesting and exciting to hear. So sit back, relax, and listen to this story come to life. Welcome to Stories Come to Life. I am your host, Catherine Lopez Luker. It is with great pleasure that I am able to announce that Simon & Schuster Publishing Company has given permission for this book to be read out loud and shared on Stories Come to Life until June 30th, 2024. But of course, the episodes that fall under that special permission will all be taken down on that date, so listen now while they're available. Here are the last few chapters of Baby Island by Carol Ryrie Brink. Mr. Peterkin is becoming a kind and helpful neighbor to the stranded girls. He cuts a path through the jungle and builds baby walkers for the little children. Mary realizes that Christmas is coming, and Jean still longs to find out what is in Mr. Peterkin's chest. Now sit back, relax, and listen to this story come to life. Baby Island by Carol Ryrie Brink. Chapter 12. Several Surprises.
"Well, I guess you reformed Halford anyway," said Jean cheerfully.
"Oh, Jeanie, what a pity," wailed Mary. "That's the end of Mr. Peterkin, I suppose. Why couldn't the babies have put off crying?"
"There's nothing like a nice clean baby to hold," mocked Jean, who was in a particularly impish mood after having had to sit still for so long listening to Mary's sermon.
"That naughty Charlie started the whole trouble," cried Mary. "He ought to be punished."
But Charlie was already on Jean's shoulder with his skinny arm around her neck, and he knew that he was safe. Whether they admitted it or not, they were both much disappointed at the outcome of the party. Mr. Peterkin had seemed so much reformed, and had even been on the point of giving them more milk, perhaps even of cutting a pathway for them through the jungle. Now all was lost. They gradually quieted the howling babies and put them down for their naps. Mary lay down also, tired from her combined duties as cook, hostess, and saver of souls. Jean and Charlie went up to the vine swing in the edge of the woods, and as Jean swung back and forth, she made up one of her songs.
"Oh, E were A-ing long ago, A-ing gay were E. E dropped a pitchfork on his toe, and then he went to sea. Oh, Mr. Peterkin, jolly Mr. Peterkin, dear old Mr. Peterkin, and then he went to sea, oh. Oh, Mary preached a sermon fine, a sermon fine, a sermon fine, while Jean was swinging on a vine. Oh, lovely Jean, oh, beautiful Jean, Prince Charlie's fond delight, oh, she really was a sight, oh. He couldn't bear a baby's cry, it nearly made the pirate die. I wonder what is in his chest, until I know, I'll never rest. Says beautiful Jean, says lovely Jean, a swinging on her vine, oh."
The next morning, there was trouble with Jonah again. He had appeared to be thriving on the goat's milk, and had fewer and fewer attacks of colic. He was really developing into a beautiful bouncing boy, and his outing on the desert island had given him a much better color and rounder cheeks than when he had been under the care of his fond mother. Mary was quite proud of him, but on the day after the party he woke screaming and screwing up his face, kicking his legs and clawing the air with his hands.
"What's a matter? What's a matter?" begged Mary, tenderly hanging over him.
"Baby talk," scoffed Jean. "If his name is Jonah, ours ought to be Job. We've got so many troubles. Jean Job. That would be rather nice for a change, wouldn't it? Or maybe it should be Job Jean." "It doesn't sound like colic," murmured Mary, running through all her little tricks for appeasing crying babies. But none of them did Jonah any good. "Do you suppose he could have caught anything from Mr. Peterkin yesterday?"
"Mr. Peterkin looks healthy to me," remarked Jean. "Only the good die young."
That remark did not serve to comfort Mary at all, for naturally she considered Jonah one of the good, and the idea that he might be going to die young filled her with even greater alarm. It was at this tense moment that they noticed the first crashing noise from the jungle. At first, it sounded like the reverberation of distant thunder, and then crash, crash! This was followed by more thunder and another crash.
"What is it?" gasped Mary.
For a few moments, Jonah was frightened out of his howls, and the four babies looked at Mary with round, questioning eyes.
"It sounds like one of those dinosaur things we had in our geography, coming through the woods and switching its tail," offered Jean.
"But the dinosaurs have all been dead these millions of years, Jean."
"Well, I told you my idea. Now you tell me yours."
Bang, 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 crash, crash.
"I don't know," gasped Mary. "It's horrible, isn't it?" Jonah began to howl again, and one by one the other babies joined him. Chattering wildly, Prince Charlie hid his head under Jean's arm. But at that moment a familiar face appeared. With a graceful swoop of red and green feathers, Halfred flew out of the jungle, and his horny old beak veritably seemed to smile at them.
"Man the pumps, Mary, man the pumps," croaked Halfred cheerily.
"He never called me Mary before. He's come to warn us, Jean."
She began to scratch his head in the place he liked and beg him to tell them of the danger. But Halfred only winked one eye at her and remarked hoarsely,
"Oh, you would you?"
"Mary," cried Jean, "I know exactly what it is. It's Mr. Peterkin, cutting a pathway for us through the jungle."
"No," said Mary, sitting down flatly on a baked banana. "But I thought we'd never see him again."
"Listen," commanded Jean, "it's his axe that goes bang, bang, bang. And then a tree comes down, crash, crash. Halfred came ahead to tell us."
"I knew that Mr. Peterkin had a heart of gold," cried Mary happily. "It just goes to show you that you should never judge a heart by the kind of face it wears."
"But what about the babies, Mary? After all his work, it would be a pity for him to arrive here and find them all howling, just the way they were when he clumped off and left them yesterday."
"Yes, it would be discouraging," admitted Mary. "I'll hand out the hardtack, and you do a Highland fling for them." Hardtack and the Highland fling did wonders for the twins and Aunt Elizabeth. In a moment they were smiling again, and Mary had wiped their eyes and noses. But the nearer Mr. Peterkin came with his axe, the more dismally Jonah roared.
"I'll have to take him down to the beach, poor suffering angel, where the sound of the waves will drown out his cries," said Mary. "You stay here, Jean, and welcome Mr. Peterkin when he comes."
Jean was glad enough to be left at the teepee, for while she was just as fond of smiling babies as her sister, she sometimes shared Mr. Peterkin's sentiments about crying ones. Halfred flew back and forth from the teepee to the scene of the crashing sounds, and Charlie, who had lost all his fear, swung through the branches by hand, foot, and tail. It was well after noon before Mr. Peterkin chopped his way out of the jungle. Poor Mary had not yet returned, so Jean knew that Jonah must still be crying. There was a final and most terrific crash, and then Mr. Peterkin put in his appearance. He was wet with sweat and looked more annoyed than usual.
"Well, there it is," he said, "a path through the jungle. I didn't want it. It weren't my idea, but there it is for them as can use it. Troublesome, I calls it."
"Oh, thank you, Mr. Peterkin," cried Jean.
"Don't thank me," said the honest seaman crossly. "It's for me little Lizzie."
"For who?"
Jean was puzzled. "I mean said Mr. Peterkin, pointing at Anne Elizabeth.
Anne Elizabeth,
smiling engagingly, crawled to Mr. Peterkin's feet and stretched up her arms to be taken.
"Pity," she said happily. "Pity, pity."
"Was they trying to starve me, little Lizzie?" cooed Mr. Peterkin, taking the delighted baby into his arms. "Was they trying to starve her, and her old Uncle Arvy with all the milk she could hold, right on t'other side of the highland? Bless her little gizzard."
Jean stared at them as hard as she could. Then she let out a howl of delight and started to run for the beach.
"Baby talk, Mary! Mr. Peterkin's talking baby talk! Come quick!"
Mary was walking slowly up the beach with Jonah in her arms when Jean called to her. Jonah was cooing happily, and Mary wore a rapturous smile on her tired face. But Jean saw with irritation that Mary's angelic smile had nothing whatever to do with the wonderful new path through the jungle, nor with the highly amusing fact that Mr. Peterkin was talking baby talk. She tried again.
"Mary, he's talking silly to Aunt Elizabeth, just the way you do. Baby talk, Mary."
"Well, of course. That was bound to happen sooner or later, dear," said Mary. "I'm glad it's come so soon, but Jean, oh, Jean, something most remarkable has happened to Jonah. Wonderful, Jean."
Jean's mouth fell open again in surprise. If Mary could accept a path through the jungle, and Mr. Peterkin's baby talk so calmly, whatever in the world had happened to Jonah to make her say remarkable and wonderful?
"Come here and look, Jeanie," she went on, "and tell me if you ever saw a more beautiful sight." Filled with awe, Jeanie drew near and gazed into Jonah's round, pink face.
"Open up, Dovey darling," begged Mary. "Open the itsy-bitsy mouthy for its ownest Mary. That's a lamb."
Jonah gave them a wan smile, and Jean had a brief glimpse of something white showing against his red gum.
"It's just like a pearl, isn't it?" said Mary proudly.
"What?"
asked Jean, still mystified.
"Why, his first tooth. Didn't you see it? That's why he was crying so this morning, poor cherub. It hurt when it was coming through, but now it's all right. And Mary's so proud of her great big baby boy."
"Oh, you and Mr. Peterkin and your baby talk," said Jean in disgust. "I'm going to see the trail through the jungle."
And away she went, whistling to Halford and Charlie to join her. Chapter 13. Mr. Peterkin Has His Ups and Downs. After the path was cut through the jungle, Mr. Peterkin became a more and more frequent visitor at the teepee. He had decided to deliver the baby's milk himself. But the girls knew now that it was not entirely because of the milk that he came. They knew that Mr. Peterkin liked their cooking better than his own. And even more, he liked to have Aunt Elizabeth tell him that his beard was pretty. He insisted that Aunt Elizabeth should have the freshest and richest milk, and he nearly always brought some trinket for her, which he himself had carved. Once Mr. Peterkin's hard heart had started to soften, it was just like ice cream in the sun. He began to carry the twins piggyback, or to ride them cock horse on his knee, and Jonah was allowed to chew his gold watch chain. Even Mary and Jean came in for a good share of his kindliness. Naturally, he still grumbled a good deal and pretended to be angry with them all. But after all, one can't throw off the habit of years in a moment. As the girls often remarked, Annie Elizabeth was probably the cutest baby ever seen. She was plump and dimpled, with shiny curls that stood up all the wrong way on the back of her head, and big blue eyes. But it very much looked as if her fatal beauty had made her lazy. She had only to smile or point or whimper a little to have people running to bring her a drink or a banana or to lift her up and carry her about. So it had never seemed necessary to her to learn to walk. When she wanted to do a bit of exploring by herself, she went on all fours like Prince Charlie. This had begun to worry Mary. Here was Jonah with new teeth, and Aunt Elizabeth still could not walk. "Do you think possibly she's weak in the knees?" she asked Mr. Peterkin one day while he was calling.
"Not her, not my little Lizzie," said that gentleman indignantly.
"She's so contented," sighed Mary.
"Look here," said Mr. Peterkin, "you need some sort of a contraption for her. A baby walker, that's what it is."
"A baby walker?"
"That's what it is," repeated the honest seaman. "Maggie and Henry had one for their 12. Blimey, I'll make you one."
"It won't hurt her, will it?" asked Mary cautiously.
"Me? Hurt Lizzie?" shouted Mr. Peterkin. "What do you think?"
So Mr. Peterkin constructed a beautiful baby walker out of tough vines, a couple of boards, and a piece of the canvas sail. It was something like a swing, and it was suspended from the branch of a tree at such a height that Aunt Elizabeth's feet could easily touch the ground without having to hold up the whole weight of her own body. She pranced around delightedly, and the whole thing seemed to be a huge success.
"Well, that's some good that came out of Henry and Maggie anyway," remarked Jean as she admired Mr. Peterkin's handiwork.
But there were others who were not so pleased. Pink and Blue stood looking on, and it was more than they could bear to see Aunt Elizabeth, the center of all eyes.
"Baba, bye-bye too," said Blue. "Baba fwing," added Pink.
Their lower lips began to drop lower and lower, trembling piteously. Large tears rolled silently down their cheeks. A more pathetic sight would be difficult to imagine.
"But you already know how to walk, twinsies," said Mary sensibly.
"Baba go bye-bye too," persisted Blue. "Baba fwing," wept Pink.
Their lower lips continued to drop farther and farther, and suddenly they let out twin howls that echoed dismally through the jungle.
"It's no use trying to persuade them once they make up their minds," said Mary. "I guess you'll have to build 2 more baby walkers, Mr. Peterkin."
Mr. Peterkin behaved very nicely indeed. With scarcely a murmur, he went to work. And before the day was over, the delighted twins were dangling in baby walkers, too. Jean and Prince Charlie had looked on with interest all the while that Mr. Peterkin worked.
"And now," said Jean politely, when the 3 baby walkers were finished, "will you please make one for Charlie?"
"How's that?"
"A baby walker for Charlie, please."
"For that monkey?"
"If you please."
"Sliver my timbers," yelled Mr. Peterkin, "and strike me red, white, and blue if you catch me making a baby walker for a monkey. No, sir, no baby walkers for no monkeys. What's he got his tail for, may I ask?"
So Charlie never got his baby walker. And it must be admitted that the twins soon tired of theirs. But Aunt Elizabeth's legs were greatly strengthened and benefited by hers. One day she was sitting on the tarpaulin outside of the teepee when she saw Mr. Peterkin coming through the jungle with his milk, and rising on unsteady legs, she took her very first steps to meet him. Mr. Peterkin thought that was the smartest thing a baby had ever been known to do. After a while, even Mary got a little tired of hearing Mr. Peterkin tell about it. "Of course, all babies learn to walk sometime," she said sensibly. "I suppose you did the same thing yourself when you were a baby, or you'd still be going around on all 4s.
"But look here," cried Mr. Peterkin. "The little beggar walked to me, she did. It weren't just a ordinary first step. She got right up and came a-walking to me, and pity, she says, a-reaching for my chin, pity."
Jean had some hopes of finding out what was in Mr. Peterkin's chest, now that he had grown so tender-hearted. On one of her cleaning days, she baked Mr. Peterkin a beautiful pie full of sliced bananas and pieces of coconut, whipped up with gulls' eggs and sugar. It seemed like a wonderful mixture to Jean, and all it needed was a bit of flavoring. But unfortunately, she couldn't find either vanilla or nutmeg in Mr. Peterkin's cupboard. However, there was plenty of garlic, and knowing that this was the honest seaman's favorite flavor,
Jean put it in with a lavish hand. The pie came out of the oven a beautiful golden brown, and when Jean set it before Mr. Peterkin at luncheon, she felt that this was the very moment to ask him about his chest.
"Ha!" said Mr. Peterkin,
rubbing his hands together with delight and preparing to plunge his knife into the pie.
"Blow me down if it ain't a tart! And what a tart at that!"
"Mr. Peterkin," said Jean hurriedly, "sometime will you let me see what's in your chest? Really, I think I ought to clean it out for you. You know, moths might get in or rust corrupt, may I?"
"Well now, little Jeanie," began Mr. Peterkin amiably, raising the first forkful of pie to his lips.
"Yes, yes," said Jeanie eagerly.
But at that first taste of pie, Mr. Peterkin's eyes suddenly seemed to start from his head. He gave a loud, strangling cough and started for the door. This was a very bad omen indeed. Jean sniffed at the pie, and it did smell strongly of garlic. But after all, if garlic was Mr. Peterkin's favorite flavor...
"No!" roared Mr. Peterkin. "Don't you never look in that chest, no ow, do you hear? And mind you've fed that tart to the goats and gulls before I get back."
Away went Mr. Peterkin to the jungle. Only one thing was clear to Jean. There was something about the combination of bananas, coconut, sugar, and garlic that brought out the worst in a reformed man. That was the second no she'd had out of Mr. Peterkin. And it proved to Jean that the battle wasn't entirely won yet. She looked wistfully at the brass-bound chest and wondered if it were lost forever. It was at about this time that Mary consulted her calendar one day and saw that Christmas was approaching.
"We haven't any place to hang our stockings," said Jean.
"Oh, we can fix up something. We must have a real Christmas for the baby's sakes. It would be awful if they grew up without knowing about Christmas.
And we can make presents for them, too, and, Mary, let's give Mr. Peterkin and Halfred presents."
"Why, of course," said Mary. "What did you think?" After that, the teepee buzzed with mystery and excitement. The girls were busy making presents out of clam and coconut shells, palm leaves, moss, clay, and sticks. Anything they could find that gave them an idea for a gift.
"What's this? What's this?" inquired Mr. Peterkin,
arriving one day with his milk while they were in the midst of their preparations.
"Oh, Mr. Peterkin, it's for Christmas," said Mary.
And Jean sang,
"We live on an island and not on an isthmus, but we can have Christmas and Christmas and Christmas." "Christmas," said Mr. Peterkin. "Blow me down. I'd forgotten there was such."
He kept saying over and over,
"Christmas, strike me pink."
And before he left that day, he had invited them all to his house to hang up their stockings over his stove and to eat Christmas dinner from his table.
"But no garlic in the pudding," he warned.
Jean blushed, but naturally Mary paid no attention to such a silly remark.
"I'm so glad," she said. "I want the babies to get used to things as they are at home, and Christmas in a tent is rather odd. Thank you, Mr. Peterkin."
"Don't mention it, miss," said Mr. Peterkin.
And Jean added sensibly, "Christmas is nice anywhere, Mary." Chapter 14. Lost in the Storm. The day before Christmas, Mr. Peterkin invited Mary over to bake and opened his precious larder to her. On his shelves he had a barrel of flour, a small keg of molasses, a tin of raisins, and ever so many things that could be turned into Christmas by a clever girl like Mary. Mr. Peterkin himself declared that he was going out to shoot a fowl for roasting.
"But mind, no garlic," he warned.
"Whatever does he mean?" thought Mary. "It must be some kind of joke." As Mary hurried along the jungle path to Mr. Peterkin's, she wondered if she should leave Jean all alone with the babies today. There was such a queer look in the sky. The sweet, fair blue was hidden by sulfur-colored clouds,
which cast a sinister glare over the familiar landscape. But Mary knew that the babies were safe in their pen, and that Jean was busy finishing a beautiful coconut ashtray for Mr. Peterkin. And, of course, there was no cause to worry about them. She took possession of the shanty with such a bustle of rattling pans, sifting of flour, and boiling of kettles, that Halford could scarcely find a corner in which to perch in peace. Mary was all excited because she had decided to undertake the making of a bag pudding. She had often helped Aunt Emma to make such a Christmas treat, and knew just how to flour the cloth, pour in the pudding, tie it all up in a great ball, and drop it into boiling water. But to do it all alone was something which required not only skill but courage. Mary had both, and so she went busily to work. "Of course, pudding won't do for the babies," she said to herself, "but I'll make a nice custard for them out of gulls' eggs and goat's milk. It will be much more suitable." As the day went on, the sky grew darker and darker, and Mary sometimes paused in her preparations to look anxiously out of the shanty window. She had just set the custards aside to cool and was cautiously turning the pudding in the boiling water, when the weather was again brought to her attention by a great clap of thunder that seemed to rock the island. This was followed by such a blast of wind and rain that Mary thought for a moment the shanty would be swept away. She quickly put the pudding pot back on the back of the stove so that it would not boil over, caught up an old sou'wester and slicker of Mr. Peterkin's, and hurried out into the storm. It was almost as dark as night outside, and the rain came down in torrents. It was the only bad storm they had had, and Mary's first thought was for the babies. Would the teepee weather this wind and rain? How could Jean handle all the babies alone? "Oh, my children, my children!" cried Mary as she hurried along. About halfway through the jungle, she met Mr. Peterkin. With his gun and two plump wild fowl still slung over his shoulder, he came crashing through the underbrush. "Where's my Lizzie?" he cried wildly.
"At the teepee!" shouted Mary. "Run!"
They ran, and above the crashing of the storm and the rattling of palm leaves, they could hear the roar of the waterfall that came down near the teepee. Its usual pleasant gurgle had grown suddenly loud and menacing. As they came in sight of the teepee, they saw that the stream had already risen high enough to reach the teepee door and was whirling away some of their shell and coconut dishes.
"Jean!" cried Mary. "Jean! Jean!"
A pitiful crying was her only answer, and running to the pen, she found Annie, Elizabeth, and Pink, dripping wet, clinging to the sides of it. But Jean, Jonah, Blue, and Prince Charlie were nowhere to be found. Mr. Peterkin grabbed the two babies up under his arms, and just in time, too, for the water was already rising inside the pen. Then he and Mary saved what they could of the furnishings of the teepee and took them to higher ground before the rising torrent swept the teepee away.
"Oh!" cried Mary. "Oh! Oh!"
It was all she could think of to say as she stood with white face and clasped hands, watching the mass of canvas and bamboo, which had been the teepee, rushing away to the sea.
"I say, you'll get your feet wet, Mary!" roared Mr. Peterkin, pulling Mary back from the rising stream.
"Jean! Jean!" called Mary,
but her voice was lost in the noise of storm and stream and lashing trees. They searched frantically for some time, but not a trace of the missing four could be found.
"Oh, I don't know what to do," cried Mary in despair.
"Now looky here," shouted Mr. Peterkin. "You and them babies is a-going to catch pneumonia like that. You go to my shanty and get warm and dry and put them babies to bed in my bed, and I'll go looking for the others."
It seemed the best thing to do, and so Mary obeyed. When Pink and Aunt Elizabeth were warm, dry, and asleep in Mr. Peterkin's bed, she put on the sou'wester again. "Halford," she said to the parrot, "I've got to go and look for my Jean. You mind the babies now, will you?"
"Well, bless my soul and body," said Halford in surprise.
But he moved from his perch on the phonograph and took up a watchful position on the back of a chair near the bed.
"Good, Halford," said Mary. "It's a hard time for all of us." And out she went into the storm, calling, "Jean! Jean! Where are you? Where are you?"
The wind still took her little voice and tossed it like nothing into the great sound of the storm. Rain and tears were all mixed on her pale cheeks. When she had gone a little way into the jungle, Mary met Mr. Peterkin coming back. He shook his head.
"'Tis no use," he said. "They're surely gone."
"Oh, no," said Mary. "I won't give up yet."
Back into the jungle they went. Rain blinded them, mud slipped under their feet, vines tripped and tangled them. But still Mary pushed on, searching and calling. Gradually the sky began to grow lighter and the storm to abate. What a scene of desolation it was! Trees broken or torn up by the roots, streams swollen and muddy, plants broken and crushed by the deluge.
"Oh, what is to become of us?" cried Mary. "Jean and two babies lost, the teepee swept away, the lovely island spoiled."
"Don't you fret," said Mr. Peterkin. "Long as I've a home, 'tis yours."
"But you don't like children," sobbed Mary.
"Whoever said that?" cried Mr. Peterkin angrily. "I'm uncommon fond of young'uns, I am."
Suddenly there was a chattering in the trees above them, and a little brown animal swung himself down to Mary's shoulder and put skinny arms around her neck.
"Charlie!" cried Mary. "Oh, Charlie, you beautiful, blessed monkey! Where are Jean and the babies?"
As if he understood, Charlie jumped from Mary's shoulder and began to go ahead of them through the woods. It was difficult to follow him because whenever Charlie came to a fallen tree or a dense thicket, he jumped into the branches overhead and swung along with his hands and tail. But scratched and torn and sorely discouraged, somehow or other, Mary and Mr. Peterkin managed to follow him. Mary half suspected that the mischievous fellow was leading them a wild goose chase, and yet they had no choice but to follow him. At last, chattering noisily, he disappeared under a ledge of rock that formed a sort of cave or shelter.
"He's having fun with us," said Mr. Peterkin gloomily.
But Mary stooped down and looked under the ledge,
and there sat Jean and Jonah and Blue.
Jean screamed.
"Don't yell, Jeanie," soothed Mary. "We've found you." "Oh, Mary," cried Jean, jumping up and bumping her head on the ledge. "I've never been so lost and wet in my life. It was awful. I never thought I'd live to tell the tale. But did you rescue Aunt Elizabeth and Pink?"
"Yes, yes," cried Mary. "Oh, Jean, I'm so thankful we found you. How did it happen?"
"Oh, Mary, Blue climbed out of the pen. You know what a climber he is, and I'm sure that Charlie helped him. I just caught a glimpse of them as they were disappearing into the jungle. I couldn't leave Jonah, so I just grabbed him up and ran after them. And they were very naughty and kept me chasing them a long time. And then the storm came and we were lost. We went around and around and couldn't get out. And finally we found that ledge to sit under."
"Well, I just hope you weren't as scared as I was," cried Mary.
"Scared?" shouted Jean. "Nobody's ever been scareder in this world. Oh, Mary, I'm so tired of this old island. I want to go home where Father is."
Jean burst out crying, and there were tears in Mary's eyes, too, as she repeated, "Home?"
"Oh, yes," cried Jean passionately. "Of course it's a nice island, and it's better than the bottom of the sea, but, oh, I want Father or Aunt Emma and streets and automobiles and places where you don't get lost in the jungle when it storms."
"Jean," said Mary gravely, "we haven't sung Scots Wha Hae for a long time. We're kind of losing our grip."
"Maybe we are," gulped Jean.
There was a moment's pause while Jean stifled her sobs in a very wet blue handkerchief. Then, with a quavering voice, she joined Mary's clear treble.
"By oppression's woes and pains, by your sons in servile chains, We will drain our dearest veins, but they shall be free. Lay the proud usurpers low, tyrants fall in every foe, liberties in every blow, let us do our deed.
Mr. Peterkin looked at them in amazement. For some magic in the old battle song of the descendants of William Wallace always put new heart into Mary and Jean, and now they dried their tears like Scottish heroes.
"Well, blow me down!" exclaimed Mr. Peterkin.
"Oh, please don't say blow me down," begged Jean with chattering teeth. "I've had enough wind for one day. Let's go to the teepee."
"The teepee's gone," said Mary.
"Gone?" echoed Jean. "But where can we live?"
"Come, come," said Mr. Peterkin gruffly. "This shanty's your home, and I time it were you was in it, a dryin' of yourselves. Give me them babies, and move along now."
Chapter 15. The Chest. As they sat about Mr. Peterkin's stove that evening, Mary suddenly remembered. "It's Christmas Eve, you know."
"Oh, Mary, did all our presents get washed away with the teepee?" asked Jean.
"I'm afraid so.
We'll have to make the best of it."
"You hang up your stockings just the same," said Mr. Peterkin mysteriously.
He was dandling Anne Elizabeth and Jonah on his knees, while the twins were pretending to be wild animals snapping about his ankles. Drying clothes steamed all about him, and if ever anyone saw a more contented picture of a family man, I should be very much surprised.
"Do you have Silent Night or any Christmas records for your phonograph?" asked Mary.
"I've got Jingle Bells," said Mr. Peterkin.
"Oh, let me play it," begged Jean. So the phonograph was wound up, and everyone joined Halford in singing the jolly old song. It brought back to Mary all the gay, snowy Christmases that she had known in the United States. How odd to be here on a desert island for Christmas. Jean's remark that she was tired of Baby Island echoed sadly in Mary's heart. It was fun for a while, but after all, Father and home were best. Would they ever see them again? Resolutely, Mary put these thoughts out of her mind. Before the babies were put to bed, the girls and Mr. Peterkin hung their tiny stockings on the shelf behind the stove. The poor little socks were worn and old now, but Mary had kept them clean and well darned for just such an occasion as this, although the babies could scarcely have been expected to understand it. Mary told them the sweet, familiar Christmas story, and even Halford and Charlie listened respectfully. Then the four babies were tucked in a comfortable row in Mr. Peterkin's bed. It had been agreed that Mary and Jean would roll up in blankets on the floor, and Mr. Peterkin insisted that he would sleep in his hammock under the palm trees. "It seems too bad to drive Mr. Peterkin out of his own house, and for a lot of meddlesome young'uns, too," said Jean. "I know," said Mary. "Tomorrow we'll have to start building a new house." But there was no enthusiasm in her voice. It seemed to her that they had been on Baby Island a very long time, and it was hard to have to begin again. Perhaps the reformed seaman sensed the feeling of gloom which had fixed itself on the girls this Christmas Eve, for suddenly he said,
"Well, well, it's been a hard day. And Miss Jean here is at a hard time. I've been thinking I'd like to do something for her to cheer her up, sort of."
"For me?" said Jean, all in a flutter.
"There is something I do once a year that might be of interest to her."
"Something you do?"
"Aye, can you guess what?"
You play the phonograph?"
"Nope, something more unusual."
"You dust off Pharaoh's horses?"
"I hates dustin'."
"Then you
count your clamshells?"
"No." Jean was wriggling with excitement because all the time she had been thinking of something which she hadn't dared suggest. Now she came out with it.
"You open your chest?"
"Aye, that I do," said Mr. Peterkin calmly.
"Oh, chest,
chest, beautiful chest,"
sang Jean, hopping up and down on one foot.
"Oh, what is inside this chest so wide? Oh, beautiful, beautiful chest!"
"Hush, hush, you'll wake the babies," cautioned Mary. Mr. Peterkin took a clumsy key out of his pocket.
"I made this ear myself. There weren't no key to this lock when I first happened onto the chest."
"You found it on the island?" asked Jean breathlessly.
"That I did," said Mr. Peterkin. "Half buried in sand it were, just up in the cove where the high tide couldn't reach it."
"Were it a pirate chest?" asked Jean, so excited that she had unconsciously fallen into Mr. Peterkin's manner of speech.
"I think it were, lass," said Mr. Peterkin solemnly.
"You aren't making this up, are you, Mr. Peterkin?" asked Mary doubtfully.
"No, ma'am," replied the honest seaman, flushing proudly. "This 'ere is the one adventure that ever really happened to me. This one weren't drab, it weren't tame. This one really happened to me."
"Was there anything in the chest?" asked Jean in a hoarse whisper.
"You take this 'ere key and look," said Mr. Peterkin,
putting the key in Jean's hand.
"'Tis just the way I found it."
Jean inserted the key in the massive lock and was about to turn it when she remembered her conversation with Mary. "There aren't any dead ladies or diseases or skeletons in there, are there?"
"No, no, no."
"Poltroons?"
"I don't know what poltroons is."
"She means doubloons," put in Mary. "Poltroons are cowards, but Jean always gets them mixed up with the word for Spanish money."
"Well, strike me pink," said Mr. Peterkin. "You've been trying to get in that chest ever since you came here. And now when I give you the key, you stand there like a zany and ask me what's in it."
Suddenly, Jean left the chest, flung her arms around Mr. Peterkin, and kissed him on the end of his nose. While he was still gasping like a stranded fish, she flew back to the chest, turned the lock, and flung open the cover. And sure enough, it was full of Spanish gold. Old, old pieces, dull with time and weather, but still, they were gold. Mary was the first to speak.
Well, I never saw so much money in my life," she said. "There's enough there to put the babies through college."
"What are you going to do with it?" asked Jean breathlessly.
"I don't rightly know," said Mr. Peterkin calmly. "There isn't much need for money on a desert highland. I thought someday to get Belinda a silk dress."
"That would be nice," said Jean. "Does she have brown hair? You might get her a red silk one and a little black hat with a red feather."
"But I've more than I want," said Mr. Peterkin, "and 'tis Christmas Eve. Fetch me the sugar scoop."
Wondering what the sugar scoop had to do with pirate gold, Jean obeyed. Mr. Peterkin filled the scoop with golden pieces. Then with great solemnity, he began to fill the baby's stockings. A scoopful of gold for every stocking. Mary and Jean watched him in awed silence. What a curious Santa Claus! And wasn't he pouring a small fortune into the baby's socks?
"Where's yours?"
demanded Mr. Peterkin, when he had finished with the babies.
"But ours are so big," protested Mary politely.
"Hang 'em up," said Mr. Peterkin. "You deserve all you get."
So Mary and Jean watched him fill each of their stockings with gold until they were so heavy that they seemed in danger of bursting.
"Think what that will buy us," said Mary, "if we ever get off the island."
Long after she was supposed to be sound asleep, Jean kept opening an eye to look at her heavy stocking, hanging above the stove and faintly lighted by the last glow of the coals. "If I ever get back," she thought to herself, "I'll get me another silk dress like the one the baby whale is wearing, and a new doll like Miranda." But best of all was the fun of unlocking the chest and getting the first peep inside. Chapter 16. An Answer to Jean's Letters. After the storm, Christmas Day dawned clear and bright. As soon as she was awake, Jean rubbed her eyes and looked at the row of stockings. They were still there, sagging with gold. So the mysterious chest was not a dream. Mr. Peterkin brought in a little tropical tree that looked a good deal like a northern Christmas tree, and they trimmed it with more of the pirate gold. Fastened on the branches with string and tree gum, the quaint old golden pieces made a very pretty decoration. After the tree was trimmed and they had dressed the babies and eaten breakfast and milked the goats, Mr. Peterkin, with his whiskers flowered to look like Santa Claus, handed out the gifts. Besides the stockings full of gold, which Mr. Peterkin seemed to consider of scarcely any consequence, he brought in a number of mysterious objects, of which he was evidently very proud. It appeared that while the girls had been spending hours on the presents which were all swept away with the teepee, the good old seaman had not been idle. He had made a little bamboo chair for his Lizzie, and a hardwood teething ring for Jonah, on which Jonah immediately celebrated by cutting his second tooth. For the twins he had made Rattles, by wiring together a couple of shells with tiny pebbles enclosed between them, and a neat handle of the bent wire. As a delicate final touch, Elisha's shells were pink, and Elijah's a pale blue. For Mary and Jean, Mr. Peterkin had carved two baskets out of coconut shells, highly polished, with their names carefully engraved upon the sides.
"But these are beautiful," cried Mary.
"Better than gold?" asked Mr. Peterkin hopefully.
"Better than gold," said Mary, "because you made them your very own self." Even Halford and Charlie had gifts, large pieces of hardtack, decorated with red berries and green leaves.
"Well, what's to stop us having our dinner?" inquired Mr. Peterkin,
when the gifts had been distributed. And this time, Mary did not make him listen to a sermon. Indeed, he did not seem in need of quite so many texts today. The girls bustled about stove and larder, and presently such a meal was served up as Mr. Peterkin's shanty had never known before. Roast wild fowl, hot biscuits, baked breadfruit, bamboo shoots for salad, with a grand climax of plum pudding for the elders and custard for the babies. As the plum pudding, steaming hot and wreathed in laurel leaves, was borne to the table, Mr. Peterkin started the phonograph to playing "In the Shade of the Old Apple Tree." Halford commenced to sing, Charlie to dance, and the babies to bounce themselves up and down in their chairs and to beat on the table with their spoons. Jean and Mary joined in the fun with shouts of laughter, and Mr. Peterkin suddenly began to do a sailor's hornpipe. They were all making so much racket that they didn't hear a very unusual noise, which started far out in the bay. It sounded again, and still they didn't hear it. It was only when everyone fell silent to watch Mary cut the pudding that they heard it. The hoarse blast of a steamer whistle. Mary dropped the knife to the table with a clatter, and everyone paused just where he was, listening. It sounded once again, nearer and clearer.
"Oh!" cried Mary. "A boat!"
"A boat!" cried Jean. "A boat! A boat!"
And even Mr. Peterkin exclaimed, "A boat!" Snatching up the babies, they all tumbled out of the shanty and ran down to the shore. Halford, following on the wing, was the only one who could think of anything to say.
"Well, bless my soul and body," said Halford.
She was not a large boat, more like a private yacht than a commercial steamer. She came in as far as she could and dropped anchor. The eager watchers on the shore saw a small boat lowered, manned, and rowed swiftly toward them. In it were five men, two in sailor costume, the others evidently landsmen. "Who can they be?" wondered Mary.
"Maybe it's the pirates coming back for their chest," said Jean.
"They mean us no good," said Mr. Peterkin suspiciously, running back to the shanty for his gun and his binoculars.
But when he returned a moment later, The small boat had landed, and he was just in time to see a most peculiar sight. The two sailors were busy pulling up the boat, but their three passengers had sprung on shore and were behaving like crazy men. One of these strange gentlemen had seized Mr. Peterkin's Lizzie and was covering her with kisses. Another gentleman was completely occupied with the three Snodgrass babies, and Mary and Jean clung wildly to the third gentleman, crying, "Father! Father! Father!" The only thing Mr. Peterkin could possibly think of to say was, "Blow me down!"
"Oh, Father!" cried Mary. "However did you find us? And we thought that Mr. Arlington and Mr. Snodgrass were drowned with the Orminta. How did you all get here?"
"You see, the Orminta didn't sink after all," said Mr. Wallace. "Another vessel arrived and took the passengers off after your lifeboat had floated away. Your boat was cast off by mistake."
"By mistake?" repeated Mary in a daze.
"In the first alarm, people thought that the steamer would sink before help could reach her, and in the confusion your boat was cast adrift too soon. But all that is long past. The great miracle is, we have found you."
"But how did you know where to find us, Father?" cried Mary.
"It was difficult," said her father. "We've been cruising around in these waters for some time now. Mr. Arlington hired the yacht and took us all with him, but we knew that you were alive and well and somewhere near."
"How did you know that, Daddy?"
"Why, because of Jean's letters to Aunt Emma, of course."
"Jean's letters to Aunt Emma?"
"Yes, indeed. They were picked up here and there, always in these waters. One of them was mailed to Aunt Emma, and two or three others were reported to the government or to the shipping companies, and we were able to get hold of them. We never could have found you without them."
"Dear me," said Jean, as surprised as anybody.
"I am a smart girl after all, aren't I?"
On board the yacht were Mrs. Snodgrass, Mrs. Arlington and the poodle, and the family reunions that day were touching. Mr. Peterkin looked on with ever-softening heart.
"Touching, I calls it," he murmured to himself. "Touching, if you ask me."
There were so many places of interest on the island to show the parents that it was decided not to leave until the next day. They must see the sight of the teepee, the path through the jungle, the Christmas tree, and have a taste of Mary's pudding. But when they entered the shanty, they were amazed to see that the pudding had almost entirely vanished. On either side of the table sat Charlie and Halfred, with fat stomachs and drowsy eyes. Their guilty looks betrayed them.
"Never mind," cried Mrs. Arlington. "There's lots of food on board the yacht, and someday Mary shall make us another pudding."
"And there weren't no garlic in it, neither," lamented Mr. Peterkin.
That night the children spent on board the anchored yacht, and the next morning they went ashore again for a few last belongings, and to say farewell to Mr. Peterkin and Halfred, of whom they had grown so fond.
"Oh, Mary," said Jean, "it's nice to be going home and all, and it's just what I wanted to happen and too good to be true and everything else, but, oh dear, I do hate to go away and leave Mr. Peterkin and Halfred."
"I know," said Mary. "It's been on my mind, too. Who'll do their cooking and their cleaning? And they've got so used to babies now, I think they'll miss us."
But Mr. Peterkin had been planning his own future. As they came ashore, they saw Mr. Peterkin locking his shanty. Halfred was on his shoulder, looking rather pale about the eyes and beak from too much Christmas pudding. In Mr. Peterkin's hand was his duffel bag, out of which protruded the purple morning glory horn of his precious phonograph, and beside him on the beach lay his chest of gold.
"Give me a hand with this chest, will you, mates?" he called to the sailors. And to the girls he said, "I couldn't bear to stay. Baby Highland without no babies? 'Twould be too lonesome now. I'm a-goin' home to marry me Belinda, I am."
"Oh, Mr. Peterkin, I'm glad you've seen the light," cried Mary.
And to Mr. Peterkin's great embarrassment, Jean repeated what she had done on Christmas Eve. She threw her arms around Mr. Peterkin's neck and kissed him on the nose.
"And after you are married," said Mary, "why don't you come to Australia and live near us?"
"I've been a-thinking of that," said Mr. Peterkin, "if your pappy wouldn't mind, and would help me to locate some land. "I shall be delighted," cried Mr. Wallace, cordially shaking the honest seaman's hand.
"And you'll bring Halford, won't you?" begged the girls.
"Aye, Halford and me as mates, ain't we, Halford? I'll not be leaving him."
While they had so much desired it, there was yet something a little sad about leaving Baby Island. Living there had been a great adventure.
"We were very happy," said Mary, "even if it was hard."
"Yes," agreed Jean. "It was a real nice place to stop over on our way to Australia."
They went to the stern of the yacht as she steamed away and watched Baby Island as long as they could see it on the blue horizon. The babies were busy with their mothers, who could not get enough of them after such a long separation, so that Mary and Jean stood alone. They waved their handkerchiefs to the empty island until it was out of sight.
"Well," said Mary, "it was better than borrowing babies for an afternoon, anyway. Just think, we had them for nearly 3 months. Jonah got his first tooth, Anne Elizabeth learned to walk, and the twins to talk. It was better than never having had babies."
"Yes," said Jean, "it was worth all we went through. Of course, there are sure to be babies in Australia that we can borrow, and anyway, Mary, we have one of our babies left."
Prince Charlie, who had been swinging in the rigging by his tail, leaped down to her shoulder and put his skinny little arms around her neck. The end.
This is your host, Catherine Lopez Luker. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Stories Come to Life. Be sure to join us next time when we begin a new book. You can find a link to our podcast on the Marshall Public Library webpage, www.marshallpl.org. I'll talk to you again soon.